Well, good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY this morning, and you are tuned in to The Morning Show on this Wednesday, January 31st, and I'm Susie Prez, one of the hosts this morning.
And I'm your co-host over here, Susie, Chris Bessler. How are you doing?
Good morning, Chris. I'm doing great. Pretty clear, beautiful sky out this morning. Did you happen to see the full moon?
No, there was actually an eclipse of the moon that was happening this morning. And, you know, I kind of peeked out there. I was actually awake early and it looked pretty overcast. So I bagged it. Did you get up? There was actually some breaks. There might have been some visibility.
Yeah. How about you, our guest, Sean Woodward?
Well, yeah, I woke up at 3:30 yesterday morning thinking that it was more like 7 o'clock in the morning. Then it was like, oh, no, that's just the moon. It was very bright, beautiful.
Yeah. Yes, truly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So to clarify, we had an eclipse of the moon last night, and it was also a super moon, which means it was closest to the Earth as it approaches. So it was about 15% larger as well. It was a blue moon. It's the second moon in the month, and they call the eclipse moon a blood moon. So it had a lot of different extra names to it. So it was kind of a cool celestial event happening.
And it's kind of rare to have that blue moon. Two in 1 month, but we're going to have another one in February or March, I think. That's what I read. Anyway.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of in a run of blue moons here.
And again, hey, Chris, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, we're going to be talking with Sean Woodward. He's a superintendent of the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. Sean, thanks for being here. Specifically, we want to dig in on the strategic planning process that the school district is currently in, as well as the way you're looking for public feedback on that, public input. So it'll be a great show.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it, this five-year strategic plan. It's going to be interesting because you're really looking for public input. But before we get to that, I do want to say that later in the show, we have a recorded interview with Bonner County election officials Charlie Worm and County Clerk Mike Rosedale. So that will be the second half of the show. And the weather. Do we want to hear about the weather?
Yeah, what's going to be happening to us, Susie?
Okay, it looks like from the National Weather Service, we have currently 30 degrees out. Today, we have a 20% chance of snow showers with a high of 35, probably more like showers by then, if we do get it. Tonight, 30% chance of snow, low 26. And Thursday, 50 to 60% chance of snow, rain, snow likely, high of 35. And Thursday night, 80% chance of snow with a low of 31. So it sounds like Thursday night, we're going to get that snow.
Some snow. Well, that's good for skiers.
Yeah, they're really happy up there right now, I'm hearing.
They have a great snowpack. Although they haven't switched over to the Schweitzer snow report. They haven't had any new snow in the last 24 hours. And the skiing conditions today are packed power and machine groomed. So still, it's always a nice day on the mountain. So if you got a ski pass, good day to get out there.
Sounds good.
And other things, what else is going on around town?
I'm not sure.
Well, you know what? It's Super Bowl Sunday coming up, and it is amazing how that sucks the wind out of just about everything else. Other organizations that are putting stuff on, they avoid this weekend because Super Bowl Sunday is happening, and it's the, what is it? It's the Patriots versus the Eagles, so a couple East Coast teams.
That's right. I heard somewhere that there's some kind of a initiative going on. It might be in jest that they're trying to make Monday a national holiday after the Super Bowl.
For all the people with the hangovers.
I guess so. I think that's right.
Yeah. But there are some things going on in town, and one of them is the second week of a original play here, Death of a Small Town in the West. That's at the Panetta Theater.
Did you see that last weekend, Chris?
I did not. I actually saw it when it played first, how many years ago?
I think it was 2010.
Yeah, so this is like a revival of that play. It was written by Ben Olson, and you can see it on the 2nd and the 3rd, which we need to flip our calendar here in the office, Susie. That's this Friday and Saturday at the Panda Theater. There's also a bunch of live music going on around town, and of course, there's a bunch of Super Bowl parties. So there are things happening in town, and you can see more about that at our website, krfy.org, and click on the community calendars. Or go to sandpointonline.com, which is where those calendars come from. And with that,
let's get to the school district, the Lake Ponderay School District number 84. Sean Woodward, superintendent,
is here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. So, Sean, I mean, right off the start, we mentioned that the school district is in the midst of, are engaging in a five-year planning process. So tell us what the process is and what the plan's about.
All right. So we're in about our second month of gathering public input as part of our process to develop our five-year plan that will take us out to the year 2023. And one of my favorite quotes is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And I love vacations like that. That's a blast, getting in the car, go on a road trip. But as far as the school district is concerned, we really need to have a clear picture where we are, where do we want to be 5 years from now? And that's what this process is all about. We're right now developing a rough draft of 5 to 6 priorities for the next 5 years or so. What is so true in many school districts across the nation, or businesses or whatnot, oftentimes people take on too many things to do all of them well. And we want to develop a list of smaller priorities and so that we can do those things really well over the next 5 years. So we're developing both long-term and short-term priorities. That's part of the public engagement process that I will get to in a moment here. And we're also, once we land on these 5 to 6 priorities, we'll be developing SMART goals or metrics to help us determine 5 years from now, how will we know we have made adequate progress on those priorities? Those metrics will include two things. It will include 5-year goals, but they'll also include, along the way, what are some of the indicators that will tell us whether or not we're making great progress towards those goals, that will allow us to make corrections midstream, that will to adjust our behaviors, and et cetera. So once we've developed our priorities, and then we've developed our goals, then we'll develop our initiatives for each one of those 5 to 6 priorities and our associated action plans as well.
So does this plan take over a current plan or update a current plan that the district has?
Yes, it does. So about 4 years ago, we went through a similar process. I'm in my 26th year in education. I've seen all kinds of planning processes, that some good, some bad. I'd like to think this is going to be a much better plan than we had 4 years ago, just because of all the things that we've learned along the way. And this plan, one of the biggest differences is we're looking for more front end public input prior to developing our draft, which will go to our board.
Mm-hmm. And of course, public input, that's what we're doing right now. We're asking for people to we're trying to get the word out that you're in this process right now. And you've just concluded the third of three public meetings on this, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so we've had three public meetings thus far, of which we sent out somewhere around 18,000 invites. I figured, I'm the eternal optimist, I thought we might get around 15,000 people showing up for our public events, of which we didn't, but we
80%,
did.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's right. We did have 70 people show up for these sessions, and quite frankly, 70 people is actually pretty good for meetings like this. I mean, they're not highly controversial. Now, we can
pack. I have to say, that's if you grade on a scale.
That's right.
Grade on a curve here.
Exactly.
It's a good turnout.
Yeah. If we had a really controversial topic, years ago, we had talked about, and thankfully we've passed that, should we arm staff or not? And it was, okay, we packed the house for that. Hundreds of people showed up for those kinds of meetings. For this kind of front-end public input, it's difficult to get at more than a handful. So we had 70 people show up over three evenings. 50 or so were community members at large that did not really have, they were not staff members or board members. So that was a pretty good percentage. we asked three questions, and I facilitated the process in these meetings. The first one was, you know, what do you think that we're doing well? It's always good to hear those things, because we don't want to throw those things out. We'd like to know, what do you value? The second was, what are some key things that you think deserve immediate attention in the short term, followed by, all right, what about the next 5 years? What should our big priorities be? And we see some pretty darn good feedback via that process, I believe.
Could you share with us what some of the feedback was of things you're doing well? I mean, is that something that will go into the strategic planning process later?
Yeah, you bet. Great question. So some of the themes that we're hearing thus far via our survey and our public meetings are things like choice. We're having far more options than we've ever had before for our families, and people value and appreciate that and want us to continue and expand on our non-traditional options for families. They're also really pleased with our career technical education programs that we have now. Now, it's very interesting because on one hand, we heard that as a priority, but we've also heard it as you're doing really well. So on both ends of that. But those are also lots of good feedback regarding our professional staff that we have in our buildings and those kinds of things. But those are some of the themes that we've been hearing about.
And what are some of the things you're hearing at this point in time that they want more of?
Well, excuse me. One is that, of course, it's not a surprise, facilities has come up. And that's definitely one of our bigger bucket themes that has come up. We've also heard a lot about ensuring that we're able to continue with our rural schools and continue to value our rural schools. There's a concern about recruiting staff out to this neck of the woods and retaining quality staff, things that are very challenging, in particular for our outlying schools. The one thing I've cautioned people with at our public meetings is that some people, you know, believe that, okay, I give input, that means it's going to make it into the long-range planning, if you will. And so I wanted to be clear on what we're looking for are themes and things that we're hearing over and over and over from people. So, for example, if somebody says, which I've actually heard, we need to create some dual language schools. We want kids to be immersed in foreign language. And now, we may only hear that from two people, say, or three people. And when at the end of our planning process, that may not make the cut. And so what I don't want people to think is, well, our feedback must not have mattered. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. What we're looking for are big bucket kind of things that people we're hearing over and over and over. So.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Sean, that this is basically updating or a rewrite of a plan that the school district has right now. You also mentioned the idea that you want to have metrics included in your plan so you can kind of measure progress over the course. It made me curious. How has the district done in meeting the goals that had set forth 4 or 5 years ago?
Some we've done very, very well on. I think our academic achievement goals we're really pleased with. So that's on the positive side. Probably the areas that we haven't been able to make much progress on would be on our facilities. So 4 years ago, we had heard that, you know, we want you all to improve your facilities. And obviously, we haven't met that goal yet. So from an academic standpoint, making much more progress than standpoint from our infrastructure and our facilities. The other area would be that we've made a lot of progress on would be for our one-to-one initiatives when it comes to technology and access for our students as well.
So I got to imagine that academic achievement will remain an important goal in this next plan.
For sure. Yeah. We have not aligned our system as well as we need to yet when it comes to the higher rigor that is expected out of our students right now. So that's going to be a big continuing goal for us, as well as what people are telling us they want to know more about is how are our students doing when they actually leave our K-12 system? And we do not currently measure that. So one of the questions in the survey that I hope people will take is what evidence should we have that would indicate whether or not we're doing a great job here? And one of the most popular responses is, well, individual student growth over time, you know, versus a grade, if you will. So that we I think we have pretty well covered. But then the second highest thing that people reference is, well, how are our kids doing 5 years after they graduate? That's a difficult to ascertain, but I think very, very important. And so many districts actually do studies every year on kids that are 1 year out, 2 years out, 3 years, and so on and so forth. And I believe we'll go down that path.
So that's probably a matter of getting in touch with those graduates and following up to see how you doing. Are you in a continuing education, or did you get into a job or a career, and to see how they're faring, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And one question, you know, that I'll definitely want to include would be, Are you making a living doing something you're passionate about? And one of our big initiatives of the next several years, and it has been trying to talk with our students from an early age about, you know, what are you interested in? What drives you? What do you like to do? And then as students get older, could there be a career for you that you can get up in the morning and say, I'm excited to go to work today? And so some of those kinds of things as well, quality of life questions, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as they say, if you love what you do, it's not even work, right?
Exactly, that's right. Yeah.
That's where we all would like to be.
Yeah. For sure.
So
we do have almost 1,000 people who have finished or taken our survey thus far. It takes about 9 minutes to do on average, and it is on our main webpage, which is lposd.org. And I'm hoping to get at least 1,500 people to take it, and it will be open for another week and a half or so.
So, listeners, if you have not taken the survey, you can go to lposd.org. Look a little ways down the page, you'll see a link to the survey, and it goes off, and it's, I don't know, it's about 9 minutes, I guess, to do it. Mm-hmm. I think I took, you know, 9.5 at least.
But. Well, the good thing about it is that I think... a lot of people have referenced, well, this question, I don't like this question, or I don't like that question. But at the same time, almost every question has room for comment. And at the end, it asks some very open-ended questions, of which we have a strategic planning committee that will read every single comment. And what we had to do 4 years ago was we literally helped develop our theme buckets by reading them, printing off all of the surveys, literally cutting all the comments off and putting them into buckets, if you will. Now we have a new program that will allow us to tag the comments. You know, technology is advancing, thank goodness, right online, and we can start seeing some of the themes that will develop. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, those online surveys are actually pretty cool, the way they work and the way they help you size up and analyze the data that you're getting from these surveys. So it can be very useful.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is The Morning Show. We're talking with Sean Woodward, the superintendent of Lake Pend'Oreille School District 84. And we're talking about the survey, the strategic five-year plan that they're working on, and how the public can have input into looking at our public school and how to continue to improve it as it's its goal. Yeah. Is to always looking forward. And so thank you, Sean, for being here. And if you don't get to hear the whole interview, you can go to our website and listen to a podcast later on in the day.
And Sean, so we talked a little bit about academic achievement. That'll probably certainly be one of the broader themes that you mentioned that you want the plan to incorporate. A tougher one, maybe. They're all tough, but facilities. So in a five-year plan, how do you imagine the plan will deal with the facilities question? Of course, we're looking at a year and a half ago, we tried to do a big plant facility levy that went down in flames.
Yes.
I think we could say, because we were trying to do my read on it was the levee was maybe too big, too broad, and trying to do too many schools. That was a lot of feedback that I think that we heard on that. How do you envision the plan to deal with the facility question?
Great question. So going backwards 18 months or so ago, you know, being the eternal optimist as well, Susie, we're in the same camp, I think, maybe here, and in that we have to look back on that and figure out, okay, what did we learn from it? And we learned a tremendous amount. So that's going to help us for sure make some really good decisions moving forward. And if you've ever read Jim Collins' A Good to Great, it's a phenomenal book, and part of the basic premises of the book is to make a series of really good decisions, you have to first confront the brutal facts. And so we've confronted the brutal facts, and what did we hear from people during that time? And what we heard, as you alluded to it, Chris, was that, okay, that was just too massive, too big. And the question isn't, do we need to pay attention to the facilities? The question is, how would we go about it in such a way that it will be supported? And so going back to the survey, of the 1,000 or so respondents thus far, 65 to 68% of those 1,000 respondents had that listed as one of their top priorities moving forward. So we know, okay, yeah, it's there. And what we'll end up doing is I believe it, of course, it'll be one of our big 5 to 6 priorities for the next 5 years. We will be developing, once we've gotten board approval on, yes, we want you to come up with a plan for this, then we will be developing our plan just for facilities. And I can't tell you exactly, of course, how that's going to go, but I can be pretty confident that it will be identifying, okay, if people are telling us start slower, well, what is the highest need building that we have right now based on all the data that we have sitting in front of us, and then go from there. A lot of the concern that we've heard was the fact that, well, okay, let's just say you have a building that, can you at least give us some estimates for what would it look like to replace a building versus renovate a building? And I know that we'll be digging into those kinds of facts and figures. And what people have to remember, though, is it's very difficult to get great estimates with volunteers that will be accurate and something that we can hang our hat on. So a lot of people criticize us in the past for paying for people to do that on the front end. And so we'll be reaching out to community members. Let's just use this facility bucket to say, okay, are there community members that have a high degree of expertise that are willing to do that kind of work for free?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
kind of a feasibility of looking at each of the buildings and then prioritizing the one that needs the most, and what do they need, and what is it going to cost to do the two things, replace it or upgrade it?
Yeah, exactly.
But a good deal of work was done prior to the plant facility levy 18 months ago. So is that going to age so we can't rely on that anymore? Or
thankfully, the money and the resources that we did invest a couple years back, we absolutely can use that work for sure. It's still highly relevant. Now, we've had some things that have happened to our buildings since then that we'll go into the equation for sure. But absolutely, Chris, we can use the work that we've already done.
Yeah, and the plant facility levy identified some buildings for replacement. Middle school, I think Northside was mostly replaced. A big upgrade for Washington School.
Exactly.
So those things magically have changed since then.
Exactly. And what the board will have to decide based on our work is the timeline, scope, et cetera. And what we'll do differently this time, again, for sure, without a doubt, will be more public input on the front end before decisions are made.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that one of the things that you're hearing already from the folks that are been coming to the public meetings is that rural schools are important. So in that case, we'd be talking about maintaining, say, Northside and Southside and Clark Fork schools. Is that likely to be quantified as a goal?
I think so. The tricky part is this. Some of the other things that we've heard through the public process and the surveys are people get tired of hearing about that we may have to close our rural schools. The fact of the matter is they will continue to hear that as long as we have to rely on local tax dollars to fund our school district, because we cannot run our rural schools without getting people out and voting yes on these measures. So the hard thing for me is people saying, oh, you continue to threaten us. And it's like, we're not like threatening. We're just painting a realistic picture here. So I know it's frustrating for people. It's frustrating for me as well. So even if we say, hey, we want to maintain our rural schools, which unequivocally we do, that's an absolute goal of district administration and our board, we still have to have the dollars to do it. So that'll be important for people to know. And we also, it's important to let people remember that population out in those areas makes a difference and the number of students attending those schools. And right now we're at a good spot, realistically. It's not feeling like declining enrollment out in our rural schools by any means. But the other piece that we've heard, on one hand, we've heard people say we need to cut our resources. We need to reduce our budget, while at the same time we need to keep all of our schools open. That doesn't work that way either.
Yeah, you mentioned that it all depends on this ever asking for tax dollars from the community. Is there any hope or a light in the distance where from Boise more money will come from the state?
Well, the good news is more money has come and is coming. That I don't believe is the problem, but it's a widely held belief that it is the problem. Most states have non-voter approved local taxes that are paid into school districts, and our state chose to go away from that, I believe, maybe 2006, 2007. And as long as we're in that boat, we'll continue to have to ask for our levy. Our state budget is increasing what the state government is giving us, which is great. But our local legislators have told us that when I've asked, will this non-voter approved part change, and they don't think it ever will, and they say nope, it's up to you as locals. You decide if you want to fund schools. We're not going to force you. And so I don't see a lot of change in that personally. But.
And of course, that puts a lot of onus on the supplemental levies. They're now accounting for almost a third of the whole budget, right?
Exactly.
So if we came along and the local taxpayers said, hey, we're not going to pass it this time, they come along every 2 years. The school district would face some very drastic cuts, of course.
Definitely would. And the good news is we have a wonderful track record of support for those supplemental levies and really good in the last 5 years or so, whereas we typically have between 64 and up to a high of 70%, and we need 50% plus one. So that's good news that those are very well supported.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I want to mention again that you're still recruiting or asking for public input via that online survey, and that's you can get to it at the website of the school district, lposd.org, and look a little bit down the page. You'll see a link for the school survey there. Click on that. You go to an online survey. It takes about 9 minutes.
I took it. It was painless.
It's painless.
Awesome. And it was interesting to read.
Yeah, it's kind of challenging to get you to think about some of the things that educators have to think about in the process of doing their work. Yeah.
Are there any more opportunities for these open public forums for public input?
Any board meeting public comment can be taken. But also, I've had so many people give me a phone call because of the flyer that we had sent out. And so I've had a lot of one-to-one meetings as well. So phone calls, emails directly to me. I'm happy to meet with people pretty much anywhere, anytime to get input. So there's always that as well.
Well, we really want to thank you for coming in, Sean Woodward, Superintendent, Lake Pendere School District 84, talking about the survey, ways to look at the strategic 5-year plan that you're working on, and really how to support our public schools.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to hear a song, and then we're going to go right into an interview that we recorded earlier with the election officials, because part of what it means to be a citizen is knowing how to, and then going to election and voting. on election day. So we had a conversation with Charlie Worm and County Clerk Mike Rosedale about the specifics of election, when to register, how to register, what's coming up and deadlines and things like that. So we'll hear that right after the song. It's Chuck Berry's School Days, and then we'll have the interview with the election officials from our Bonner County. Our guests today are Mike Rosedale, County Clerk, and Charlie Worm, Senior Election Supervisor for Bonner County Elections. Thank you so much for joining us today. The goal is to share vital voting requirements and information regulations in order to encourage the citizens of Bonner County to get out and vote. So thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having us on.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you.
And I'm Jean Girth, and I'm here to ask some questions. Primary voting day is coming up on May 15th for the 2018 general election, which will be in November. But now is the time to start thinking about getting registered and getting informed for the primary. So can you give us a little idea? I know there's a website for the election office and a telephone number, and you guys have always been a fountain of information. Tell us, if somebody has a question, where would you send them?
The best idea would be to give us a call, area code 208-255-3631. And we do have a website, a county website. It's bonnercountyid.gov. And the state has a site where you can register online, and it has lots of good information. That site is idahovotes.gov. Idaho Votes is all one word.
Okay, so with a focus on the primary ballot on May 15th, can you give us an overview? What offices, you know, what's going to be on the ballot? I'm always mystified when I go in and I pick up a ballot and there's always something on it I didn't expect. So
right. Well, this is going to be a unique time. We're having an advisory ballot, and you're located here right next to the Scotchman's Peak organization. And so we're going to have an advisory ballot for people to vote whether they think it should or should not be declared a wilderness area. So that'll be a big thing. That'll draw everybody. And I think it's fantastic. The commissioners wanted to do that so that they know, you know, what the county voters think. And so although there will be no electioneering or, you know, you should or shouldn't vote any particular way on the ballot, it'll be interesting to see everybody's, you know, signs and stuff as that comes up too. So that'll be a big topic.
So just to be clear, that advisory question on the ballot, it's not partisan. It's anyone can come in and if they're registered and make it known how they feel about that
question. That's a great question, because we've had that come to us when the commissioners decided to do that. It is nonpartisan. So everybody, regardless of how you register to vote, gets to vote on that issue because it's not partisan. It would be just as if you had a water or sewer district question or you know, anything like that. You get to vote. It has nothing to do with partisan. So that'll be that. And, of course, that is a non-binding. It's just an advisory. So it's just for them to get the flavor of what the residents think, and then they can do what they want. They'll probably go with whatever the residents think, but it's not binding.
Great. So, and then there's going to be a slew of offices.
Lots of county offices are going to be going up. Commissioner districts 1 and 3, and those are held by Glenn Bailey and Dan McDonald currently, and then the clerk, my office, the assessor's office, the treasurer's office, and the coroner's office. So those are the local offices that are going to be going up for election in May.
And in addition to that, we're going to have state and federal.
We do. So we have, of course, every 2 years, our state representatives are reelected, and that'll be congressional districts 1 and 2, 1 and 7 for the legislatures. So that currently Sage's a representative. He's up for reelection. Heather is up for reelection. Sean Keogh is not rerunning. So there are two persons, Mr. Woodward and Danielle Ahrens. Those are the two so far that are running on the Republican ballot, and I'm not sure if there are any Democrats yet in the race, but so those are running as well. And in addition to that, at the gubernatorial level, we have a very interesting, we have a big field of people We have six or seven on the Republican side, and the Democrats actually have a very big race between A.J. Balakoff and Paulette Jordan. Paulette Jordan's a Native American Indian and very active, and Balakoff as well. So there's actually something for everybody. So the Democrats have a very viable race in May if they choose to vote on the Democrat ballot, and the Republicans have a lot going on as well. So it'll be very interesting in May.
And then also Raul Labrador's seat, but he's not running for, so the federal representative, I don't think you mentioned that.
Raul Labrador.
That's a big field there.
Right. So in that field, I understand right now we have Russ Fulcher, Mike Snyder, Luke Malik, and David Leroy and Christy Perry on the Republican side. And the Democrats wanting that seat are Donald Miller, Michael Schmidt, and James Vandermass, I believe.
And as you say, that's a big field, right?
It's a huge field, yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that someone might be confused with all of these candidates running so far, there still may be more.
Oh, there most certainly will be more.
So the deadline to put your hat in the ring, so to speak, or to declare your candidacy is?
March 9th, 5 o'clock at the elections office. And so, with that, you would need to have your paperwork filled out and have your filing fee paid, or have the right number of signatures by registered voters.
And what is that? Is it vary for different seats? Charlie?
It's 5 votes.
So you need 5 signatures from voters.
Right, 5 signatures, I'm sorry.
And a $40 fee?
$40.
And that's
not,
it.
Not and, or.
And it's or. Right, so if you don't want to get people to sign your petition to run, you can just pay $40.
And there's still a lot of seats open at this point in time.
Well, I don't know by open. I think everybody, the assessor's office has 4 people running because Jerry Clemens is not running as far as we know. So there are four people running for that office. I don't know of, and there's 3 people running for commissioner district seat number 3, Dan McDonald. There's 1 Republican running against Dan, and there's a Democrat running in the primary as well. Nobody yet has announced, I believe, for district 1. there's nobody running against the clerk, the treasurer, or coroner right now. And I don't know anybody that's running against Sage Dixon. I don't know about the other races. I do know about Sean Keogh's race.
Because of this ever-changing makeup, what's the best way to stay up to date on who has filed? I mean, we have to wait. The official filing doesn't... a lot of these people have declared that they're going to run in the paper, but the official filing date, when that ends, how do we find out who's filed?
Well, so one thing you can do is you can keep up with who's filed for their financial treasure, and that you can't file yet. So all these people that are locally are running, they're not technically running yet, but they've announced that they're going to file and run. But at March 9th, then you can call our office, and we... actually, we normally let a lot of the media outlets know who, you know, the Republican Central, the Democrat Central committees, we let them know who they are, and they're then certified then for the ballot, because they need to know.
Yes, we do, and that's part of the voter education part,
right.
Is that this is actually quite a bit of homework to do before you walk into the primary.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And just so you know, KRFY will have Local Decision 2018 primary, where we will invite all of the candidates at some point in time, once we know who they really are, to come in and talk about the issues and what their stand on those issues. So you can, and there's a lot of other places you can get informed. They'll have probably the forums through the Reader and Keoki and various other publications, just to find out who these people are, because that's a lot of people.
Right, there will be a large field. It most certainly will be larger than you see it right now. People will, and but by March 9th, we'll know.
Okay, so that I think we kind of covered the offices that will be on the ballot. A beginning look at who's going to be running,
and this is the primary ballot.
Primary,
not general election.
Can I make one little error? District 1, I believe the incumbent is running, Glenn Bailey.
Right. As far as a contest, right?
Commissioner, yeah.
Yes, Glenn Bailey is running. I was speaking as far as a contest. And the coroner is running, and the treasurer is running, and the clerk is running. But
uncontested.
Uncontested. That's what I meant.
To date.
today.
Yes. So let's get to the nitty-gritty from the voters' side of things. There's a lot of people who are new to Bonner County. I understand it's a little different in Idaho than in many other states, and that we have to be a little bit more proactive. Nobody's mailing out ballots to people unless you go in. Maybe from the viewpoint of somebody who has not registered in Idaho before, and then also any updates that already registered voters need to be aware of.
Registration has changed a little bit this year. The state's made it easier. You can go to idahovotes.gov and register online if you've got a driver's license or a state Idaho state ID. Otherwise, you can come into our office and register at our office. You can ask for a registration card to be mailed to them. We do ask that you put your driver's license number on there. And if you don't have a driver's license, give us a picture, a photo ID, and some sort of a utility bill or something that shows your address so that we can verify that you're a resident of Bonner County. And the last date for registration is April 20th. That's for pre-election registration. If you want to pre-register before our May 15th election, register on April 20th or by April 20th in our office or by mail. But we always have election day registration, which means you can register and vote at the same time at your polling place on election day.
And I think that's real important. A lot of people aren't aware of that. But so there's a multitude of ways that you can get registered, including finding out where your poll would be and walking in that day.
Yes, on election day, you can always walk in and register right then. You do have to have the documentation to prove, you know, where you live and who you are, who you say you are. And that is a viable option for some people. You can do that.
Great.
So when you talk about documentation, exactly what does that mean?
To register, we need a photo ID. It can be a driver's license from a different state if you haven't got an Idaho state registration yet. Driver's state ID yet. So a photo ID and some sort of a statement that shows your current address in Bonner County, a utility bill or something on that order. Those two are what you need to get registered.
So there's a multitude of ways to do this now, and it sounds like it's pretty easy.
They want to, the Secretary of State, when we've had different questions that we've posed to them for, different registering scenarios, petition scenarios, they want to enable people to vote. And their goal is to enable people to vote. So they are trying to facilitate that. There are some times when they just can't get there. There's just not enough to get somebody there. But they do want to enable people to vote.
Great.
So to the degree you can prove you live here and you are who you are, they really want to enable you to vote.
Could you talk a little bit then, too, about the voting process? Because I know I had lived here for quite a while before I realized that there's easy ways to vote, like absentee ballot and walking into the office. So maybe you could tell us about that once you're registered or for people who are already registered.
We do have absentee voting, and you don't have to be out of the county to get an absentee ballot. You can ask for one by mail. The deadline for that is May 4th. You need to fill out an application form, which can be found on our website or the state's website, or you can pick one up in the office, or we can mail one to you. Fill out that application process. As long as it's into our office by May 4th, we'll mail you a ballot. You can also come into our office and vote. We start approximately 3 weeks before the actual election, and we call it in-person absentee voting. You can come in, vote, get it over with, and you don't need to give us an excuse. You can just do it. And finally, the election day, go to your polling place, vote at your polling place.
And that is May 15th coming up this
year.
That's
correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And have you talked about how someone would register for a certain party?
So there's several ways to register. There are several parties to register, or you can just remain unaffiliated. So when you register, you have to register with a party, or if you don't, then by default, you haven't yet affiliated with a party, so the caption would be unaffiliated. So you register Republican, Democrat, Constitution, and
Libertarian.
And if you don't register for one of those, then you are unaffiliated. If you run for an office, you have to, by May 9th, register as your party. So if you're running, you have to register as a Republican or Democrat or Constitutional or Libertarian. If you don't need to run for a party, then you can remain undecided or just You don't have to determine. You can leave that blank and then decide on election day. You can actually affiliate with whichever party you want to on election day.
It seems like that's an important day.
It is.
That you can stay unaffiliated up until you go to vote.
And then
you can choose at that point in time.
That is correct.
Okay.
If you affiliate, you cannot change on election day.
And how early do you have to change? If you want to change your affiliation, how soon before election?
March 9th. If you're already registered and to change your affiliation, that has to happen on March 9th. What Charlie was saying is if you're not registered but you want to register to vote, then there's a later deadline for that.
So the reason for this is the Republicans have what we call a closed election. So you have to be a Republican or affiliate as Republican before you can ask for a Republican ballot. The Democrats have an open election, which means anybody in any party can ask for a Democrat ballot. You don't get to vote on both ballots. You just get to vote on one. And you can ask for a nonpartisan ballot if you want, which will have the wilderness area question on it. And I'm guessing some judge retention.
There will be judge retentions, wilderness area, and if there's a school question as far as a levy issue, those would be on it. It would be everything that is not a partisan question.
So I have a hard time making up my mind a lot of times. And so I'm the kind who will wait and wait and then go, oh, which ballot do I want to vote on? Because clearly in Idaho, there's a strong Republican bent, and sometimes there's more choices on one ballot than on another. So what would I do if I wanted to wait until the last minute and walk into the poll and be able to then say, oh, I want this one or I want this one?
Right. Well, if you know which party you're going to vote for, you can do that now. But if you don't know, like what you're saying, then you would go unaffiliated, and then you can decide at the polling place on that day which party you want to affiliate with.
And I understand, too, that if you're registered, affiliated as a Republican, you can go in on election day and ask for a Democratic ballot.
You could do that.
The only thing you can't do is if you're affiliated Democratic, Constitutionalist, or Libertarian on the day that you walk in, there's no way to get a Republican ballot.
That's correct.
Okay. It's very confusing, and I think what I've come down to is if I want the most choice when I walk in, I'm going to be either unaffiliated or Republican.
That would give you the most choices.
Okay. I got it. Thanks.
You got it. Finally. I know. It's very confusing, but it's really helpful that you both came in to help us kind of sort this out for our listeners who we want to encourage to vote and to get involved in the process. So thank you again for clarifying that. And the phone number to call your office again is 208-255-3631.
And tell us where you are physically, too, if somebody just wanted to walk in. I love walking into your office. It has beautiful maps and friendly people.
We're at 1500 Highway 2 in the County Administration Building, and we're on the first floor in Suite 124. Look for the American flag above the door.
So, well, thank you so much. Anything else, inspiration or information that you'd like to give to the listeners of The Morning Show?
I've got some changes that we've made to polling places and precincts around the county. We've done a bunch of smaller things, but the main changes are to the Baldy precinct. We have changed the polling place from the church on Division to the VFW at Division and Pine. Also, we have changed the Kootenai precinct. It was getting way too big, too cumbersome. So we've taken 500 voters and we've moved them to surrounding precincts. So I'm sorry to all the chief judges around the other precincts. They're going to have more voters. The Dover precinct is now in
Commissioner's District number 2.
Number 2, right. Which won't make any difference to the voters, but it does make a little difference on where the commissioners are going to come from. Priest River West City and West Priest River Bench have been consolidated into one precinct in Priest River, and it's going to be called West Priest River. The polling place will be the VFW in Priest River for that precinct, West Priest River. And every voter who's affected by these changes will get a letter in the mail describing where they vote and which precinct they belong to. There are a few other smaller changes, but like I say, everybody will get a letter on that.
And they can also call 208-255-3631. 3631.
That's correct.
Okay. One of the other clarifications that just popped into my mind, District 1 and District 7. In Bonner County, we have two separate districts that yes. people vote. So I know, Gene, you live in for the state. Mm-hmm. You live in District 7. So when you go to your polling place, you'll have a different primary candidates
correct.
To look at
They'll
for
be,
the state only.
Correct. And I think this year it's the Senate seats up yes. and the one representative. Or two representative seats. But they'll, yeah, the ballot will look different. And it's basically south of the river, isn't it?
It's
seventh.
Of the Clark Fork River and east of Highway 95 is District 7.
Okay. So it's just that little corner there. So, yeah, that's something to be aware of for Sagal. A lot of Sagal voters is that you're going to have to be aware of a different set for the state. I think everybody else will be the same, though. All the Bonner County offices and the federal offices are the same for the whole county.
Yes.
Great.
I'm sure that helps in your process. It's probably very confusing down there when you start counting everything, but it's done electronically, is what I understand.
It is. You know, we have thinking about that and how you can have different elections. This one won't be so bad, but in some May elections next year and we have a situation where we can have up to 170 different ballot faces because we have overlapping school districts, depending upon the trustee zones, water districts, fire districts, commissioner districts, or not, if it's a primary, and then you have the different legislatures, you have all the different people running, you have HOAs, you have, all sorts of different things that overlap. And the combinations of where your particular property is and where, what you vote on can be just incredible. So we have a huge amount. Without computers, it would be impossible.
Right. And we'll dig into that more as the election season proceeds to help educate and inform people. I have one more question. Do we have time? There's been talk in the last couple of years. I've seen people saying, oh, if you're not a Republican, you should not register to be a Republican. Are there any official guidelines about that? I mean, is there any criteria or?
Well, there's no official criteria. And I know that I've heard, people comment on both sides of that. I think that if you're a Democrat and you want, the gubernatorial, the governor to be a Democrat, that would be a valid race. Certainly, there are different things to vote for, but that would be inherent in each party. So I don't really have a standing on that. There's no formal rule on that, if that's what you're asking.
Anybody can affiliate with the Republicans or the Democrats. And I know what I've been coming down to is I just want to look at what's going to be on the ballot before I go in so I can decide where I want to put my vote.
Yeah, you can do that. There's no formal rule against that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we really want to thank you again, Mike Rosedale, mm-hmm. County Clerk, and Charlie Worm, Senior Election Supervisor for Bonner County Elections, for coming in. And I do want to say I hope you'll both come back for the right before the general election to keep us informed, because having informed voters really helps.
Well, thank you for having us on. This is a delight.
Yeah.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you. And we just heard a recorded interview with the Bonner County election officials, Charlie Worm and Mike Rosedale. And this is The Morning Show right here at 88.5 KRFY on this beautiful Wednesday, last day of January, the 31st of January. And we have a few more things next tomorrow on The Morning Show. Jim and Jack will take a backward glance at the musicians, singers, and songwriters we lost in 2017. Again, that's at 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. This is our Panhandle Community Radio. And next week, Chris and I, our guests will be Mary Jensen, Jennifer Greaves from the Forest Bird Charter School, and our second guest will be Barb Nuke from Take Time Nonprofit. So you can tune in to all the morning shows Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. And just so you know, we're having a volunteer training and orientation and broadcast training next Wednesday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. If you're thinking of becoming a volunteer at this community radio station or want to join the KRFY broadcast team, now is the time. We'd love to have you. You can call 208-265-2992. Leave a message and we'll call you back. And right now we're going to go out on this morning show with Bill Haley and the Comets. Rock around the clock. Have a great day.
One, two. 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock, we're gonna rock.